things, but I hope you can put it in place as you study the scripture. And I'm going to do my best to help you along that line. And as we begin, we want to look back at just exactly where we are. And if you think about it, we just got through studying in here the United Kingdom and the divided kingdom and Judah alone. And this is the kings in the divided kingdom that you looked at in here. And if you'll remember, Rehoboam and Jeroboam were kind of contemporaries. And then you had Abijah, Asa, and Asa was contemporary with Nadab, Baasha, Elah, Zimri, and Omri. And then you had Jehoshaphat, somewhere close to the time of Ahab, Ahaziah, and then Joram and Jehoram were kind of contemporary. Then you had Ahaziah, along with and Jehu and Israel, Athaliah, and then Jehoash and Jehoahaz, and then Joash also in Israel, contemporary with Joash in Judah. Then you had Amaziah along about the time of Jeroboam the second, and then Uzziah reigned for several years, and you had Zechariah, Shalom, Menahem, Pekahiah, Pekah. And then in Judah, you had Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, and he was kind of contemporary with Hoshea. And then you had the fall of Israel, about 721. I know I'm going over this fast, but you've already had this, so I'm pretty good. Then you had Manasseh that you talked about. Can anybody tell me about Manasseh? What kind of person was he? Good, bad, or indifferent? Bad mostly. Bad, real bad. That's right. And so then you had Ammon, which was not a whole lot better. And then you come to Josiah. We're going to pick up Josiah tonight in our studies. And that's along about 640 B.C. And then you're going to find that we just got a few more kings down the line. Jehoahaz, or he's also called Shalom. Eliakim is also called Jehoiakim. And then you have Jehoiachin. And then Zedekiah, and then you have the fall of Jerusalem and Judah. So we're gonna kind of head down the road here, and so we can get things started tonight. And we have a captivity and return from captivity in this study of this quarter, and David kind of gave an introduction to it. This is lesson two, and we'll be studying the history of Judah, Jeremiah a little bit, talk about him, and also Daniel, and we'll look at the early stories of the book of Daniel. Alright, these are some important dates. Those were handed out to you. If you didn't get a copy of that or a copy of the kind of the itinerary, we've got some in this back window back here. If you need one, they might can hand it out. Anybody need a copy of that? Everybody get the others. A few of them need some. Jeremy, if you'll do that for me, please. All right. The main ones we want to look at tonight is going to be the 606, the first captives taken. And we're going to kind of begin with that, and we'll see how things turn out from that point. Just a rough timeline that you can look at and follow. You have Josiah begins ruling at the age of 8 years old. That seems like an awful young person to rule a kingdom, but that's exactly what was happening. And he was the last good king in Israel. There were about four kings that actually followed him. And then we find also in around 625, we find that Babylon gains its independence from Assyria. Now, do you remember where Assyria comes into this? What did Assyria do? Come again. Carried away the northern tribes. Okay, very good. And so Assyria was in charge. And now we find that Babylon is actually going to gain its independence from Syria. About 626 B.C., we find that Jeremiah was called to prophesy about 14 years later. And that would be in the 13th year of Josiah. You find this in Jeremiah, the first chapter. Around 621, Josiah, in his 18th year, he begins to cleanse Israel and Judah of their idolatrous ways. How long had it been since they were doing idolatry? How many years? A bunch of years. They've been doing idolatry in Judah. This was the one that supposed to be where the remnant comes, where it is saved, and the Christ comes through these people, the folks in Judah, where the remnant, where Christ is going to come through these folks. And yet, the way they're living, God has had just about all he can take, is what it amounts to. And he's going to send them away into captivity. We're going to get into that. But Josiah was a good king, and he tries to cleanse the nation of all these idolatrous ways. And also, not only that, but he worked on getting the temple cleansed. And so they started cleansing the temple. And during this process, they found something very important. What do you think they might have found? Would you believe they found the book of the law in the temple? No one had a clue that it was there. It was brought out and it was read to Josiah. He just fell apart, you might say. He was just overwhelmed. And he distraught, he ripped his clothes, and he was just beside himself, as we would say today. Well, not only did he do that, but he also stamped out the idolatrous ways and so forth. And he wanted to get things set right before God. And he worked on that. And he contacted, or had contacted, the prophetess Huldah, a prophetess, to find out what's all this going to mean to Judah. And the prophetess told him, said, destruction is inevitable. It can't be stopped. Judah has gone too far. In other words, you know, with your children sometimes, you say, now don't do that. Now don't do that. This is the last time I'm going to tell you, don't do that. You know, finally they just get to the point where you've had all you can take. And you have to discipline. Most of the times you waited about three times too late, you know. So, you'll learn that as time goes by, you know, when you're training your children, you know, you learn to spank them the first time and they learn not to do that. So, but Josiah dies not too long after this. The righteousness before God just faded away. And it kind of went bad from that point. In 612, we have Nineveh falling. That would be the Assyrians. The Assyrians fall, and or Nineveh falls, and Pharaoh Necho. Now, where do you think of Pharaoh when you think of that? In Egypt, we learned of Pharaoh years ago when Moses went there. Well, this man's called Pharaoh Necho. And he was coming up from Egypt, and he was going up to help the Assyrians to go against Babylon, but it didn't work out. And, but during this particular time, you have Josiah thought, well, I'll go out and I'll stop Pharaoh Necho as he comes through the land. And that'll prevent any kind of coalition between Egypt and Syria. Well, that's one mistake he made that was devastating. As a matter of fact, he was slain during that particular battle. And so we find that after he died, Jeremiah lamented over him, and he was just distraught and wept. And Pharaoh Necho makes Josiah's son, Jehoahaz, the king instead of Josiah. And after 3 months, he moved him from there down to Egypt. And he took him away to Egypt, and pretty well the last you hear of him. And Pharaoh Necho actually took Eliakim, another son of Josiah, and put him as king. Nebuchadnezzar comes and defeats the, he comes down and defeats Egypt, and we're going to look at that in just a minute. Before we get to that point, we want to remember that Jeremiah is still the prophet there, and in Judah. And he's prophesying. And he's looking at these different men, that are working there. And he had kind of upset the king. And so they were trying to murder Jeremiah. And they kind of followed the process. He survived it. They probably confined him, but Uriah, who was also a prophet, he fled to Egypt to get away from it. But they caught him, brought him back, and actually killed him by the sword. Well, as Babylon comes and defeats Egypt and Assyria, they met at Carchemish. It's kind of hard to explain where Carchemish is, but it's from Jerusalem. It's just straight up north almost. Several hundred miles, actually. But that's where they met, and that's where Babylon actually defeated them. And Babylon pursued the Egyptians all the way down to the borders of Egypt at that particular time. And as they were going, Nebuchadnezzar heard that his father, Nebuchadnezzar, had died. And so Nebuchadnezzar was really worried, because in those days, your brother, your uncle, or your cousin, or whoever it might be, could take over the kingdom if you're not around. So Nebuchadnezzar leaves his army down in the area of Egypt, and he takes just a few good men, and he heads back home to Babylon. But he doesn't go like the crescent circle, as you think about, you know, when Abraham came over, he followed the rivers and came down. Not Nebuchadnezzar. He headed out across the desert, made a shortcut because he wanted to get home before somebody else took over his kingdom. And so he took several good men and they headed back. He left his army there, and they came back up through Judah. And that's the time when they stopped and they collected the captives, and conquered the nation there of Judah. And they took away Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Anybody know who those three are? What do we know them by? No idea? Huh? How many has heard of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? How many have heard of that? Well, that's the way we talk about them all the time. And the stories that follow as well. Well, the captivity has taken place. And Jeremiah, during this particular time, had decided to write down words of the law, or the beginning of all the words of the Lord. And so he had Barak, a man who's a scribe, I suppose, but he wanted him to go and read it before the house of God. And so a special message came to Barak and told him that do not expect things to be good. You know, why are we doing this, or things to go good for Judah, because God said, I'm about to bring destruction upon them. Well, a little later, Barak actually reads this scroll to the people, and Jehoiakim was told that he was reading this, and so he had him come to read it in front of him. And during that time, as he was reading, he took it out of his hands, real cool, like, you know, took his pen knife and just cut it up in pieces. The law of God. Somebody doing it. And then he took it, all the pieces, put it in the fire. I don't think God felt about that. Yeah. You can kind of see how these people felt towards God. They just didn't have any concern for that. But we find that as we look a little bit further, this is about the time that Daniel and his cohorts were taken to the land of Babylon. My mouth is dry, I'm sorry. That's a bit over. Jeremiah predicts that Jehoiakim is going to die. And he says, this is not a person that you cry about. And what's going to happen is, he's going to die the death that you just don't care anything about, more or less. Nobody's going to worry about what happens to him after he's dead and gone. Jeremiah had the scroll, as we talked about that already. Daniel's three friends faced defilement, and we're going to the next. Nebuchadnezzar's second year is coming up in around 604. Alright. So we find, the time frame for the story in Daniel the first chapter. If you want to look over there in Daniel the first chapter, we'll see how this fits in. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. This is around 606, if you remember, when they first came to take over Babylon. Around 606, 605, in that neighborhood. So we learn of the time frame of that is going on here. Nebuchadnezzar in his first year, and he takes these captives. He orders that these men be taken. And Daniel, whole book of Daniel covers this entire period during captivity. He lives through the whole 70 years. So Daniel, he was an old man, if you think about it, because captivity lasted 70 years, and he was a young man when he was taken. So he was an old man when some of them returned back to Judah. The first six chapters kind of tell the events of the lives of Daniel and his friends, and then the last six chapters kind of tell of the dreams and the visions that they dealt with. As we look at Daniel 1 and verse 3 through 7, it talks about Nebuchadnezzar ordering Ashpenaz, the chief of his eunuchs, to select the very finest of the young men. This was one, like we talked about earlier, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were of the nobility of the land of Judah. They were heirs of the king, more or less. And they had an aptitude for learning, so they were very brilliant. They didn't have any physical defects. These were some fine young men. We could pick out a few here, I guess. I'm not sure that our men fit into these categories. I'm not sure that anybody here is from nobility, so that leaves all of us out, more or less. But these men were to be trained in the wisdom of the Chaldeans for up to 3 years that they were to be trained. And as we look a little further, we find that this was when these men, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, their names were changed when they got to Babylon. And their names were, Daniel was named Belteshazzar, and Hananiah was named Shadrach, and Mishael was named Meshach, and Azariah was named Abednego. So the king had that ability to rename those guys. And as we think about things that had happened, why Babylon would be the one that would come to take over and conquer the land of Judah. As you think back earlier in the days of the king, you think of a king that had actually had emissaries from Merodach Baladan. Anybody think of who that king of Judah was? Hezekiah. They came and looked at, and Hezekiah was, oh, you got to see what's in these. All of the goods that they had, all the riches, he showed them everything. Matter of fact, I said, what did you show them? I showed them everything. That's like having somebody come into your house and look here what I got in my safe. Well, if you got to say. But as these people from Merodach Baladan, they left, you know, and Isaiah told his guy, he said, you have really made a mistake. But one day Babylon is coming and going to take everything, all of your descendants, the whole nine yards, you know, you're not going to have anything left. And that people from Babylon is going to do that. Well, that was like 100 years before this particular time right here. So we don't, it's a pretty good while before, that actually took place and Babylon came. We find that, that would have been Daniel's family, the royalty. Babylon plans, regarding the captives, he wanted to make them Chaldeans. He wanted them to learn the ways of the Chaldeans and to become, you might say, advisors to the king. That's what he wanted from Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. This is not unusual. If you'll think about it, even Pharaoh back in the days of Egypt, he called for his magicians and sorcerers and enchanters or whatever they were called. You remember, he called them in when Moses came and he threw down his rod and it turned into a snake. And then what did the other magicians do? They did the same thing. So that's not uncommon for kings to have these kind of people there kind of as advisors and enchanters or whatever, sorcerers, whatever you want to magician. things like that that they had. And these men were thought to have actually a little supernatural power. Because they were of royalty and those kind of things, they thought they were just really uppity up. And that's the reason they were chosen by the king. Well, in the process of this, we find that in trying to make them Chaldeans, it didn't work as far as Daniel was concerned. He had a plan of action that he wanted to follow. He wanted to follow God's way. He wanted to follow God and do the things that God commanded. And as he did that, he didn't want to be defeated in defeatist attitude when he thought that, not one of accepting just whatever the king said. You know, I'll do whatever you say, regardless. Because the king had put some things on them, requirements that Daniel couldn't go along with. And so, as we look at first, he had an internal resolve to not do anything that would defile him with God. And as we think about it, some of the things that was required of him and them was that they were to eat of the food that the king had, that he was going to put before them, and the drink, wine that he had for them as well. Well, we don't really know for sure what kind of food it was, nor do we know about the wine. But we know that Daniel felt like he would be defiled before God if he ate it. What's the possibility of what it might be? What would be defiling to Daniel? What kind of food? Hogs? You know, anything that didn't meet the criteria for a clean animal that God had specified way back for them to eat. And all of that. It might have been the fact that animals weren't bled correctly. We don't know sure exactly what it was that caused this. But Daniel, he was determined that he was not going to be involved in it. But that was the first thing that he resolved. Second, he had a plan of action of what to do about this, when it was presented to him, about the food and so forth. And, he first of all went to the one that was over him, over the eunuch, and he told him, he said, you know, if you would just let us have pulse and water, vegetables and water, and just give us 10 days. 10 days is all I would ask you to give us. And in 10 days, then you come and look at us, and then you look at the other men that's in this training program as well. Well, I can't do that. You know, if you happen to look bad, you know, the king is going to have my head. The one that's over all the units said, you know, he said, you know, I'll be killed. And if that's the case, you know, I can't do this. He said, just give us 10 days. And that way, I mean, it's not like the whole 3 years that they're going to be in this training process. So in 10 days, he agreed to do it. And in 10 days, then he came and compared Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego with all these other ones who were being trained at the same time. Well, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were so much better looking. Their countenance was good. Everything looked really good, you know. And so he agreed that during this 3-year process, that he would let them eat vegetables and drink water. And so we'll see how that plays out as time goes by. And it really worked out really good for Daniel. Well, during this time, that they were actual training, we find the second year came of Nebuchadnezzar. When was the first year? When Daniel was taken, right? So this is the second year. So what does that mean about Daniel? Well, let's see if I can get there. Alright, that meant that Daniel was still in the training period that he had been put in to learn the ways of Chaldeans and all these kinds of things. So, we're going to find that during this particular time is when the king actually had this dream. And as he had that dream, the problem with the dream was, I forgot what it was. You ever done that? Had a dream, wake up, forget what it was? Man, I remember some parts of it. Well, the king didn't remember the dream. And so he called all these magicians and soothsayers and all those folks who are supposed to be wise and have all this extra knowledge. He said, I want y'all to tell me what my dream was and get me the meaning of it. Whoa, wait a minute. No king has ever asked for this before. I mean, no king has ever done it. You tell us the dream, O king, and we'll tell you the meaning of it. It's gone from me. I don't remember it. But you can't tell me the dream, and I have my doubts that you can tell me the meaning of it. So you tell me the dream and the meaning. Oh, king, you know, there's nobody that can do that unless it's the God of the heavens. Can you imagine those men? This wasn't Daniel that was telling him that. It was those other men that were training as well, and maybe not even training, but the trainees, even the ones who had already been his advisors and so on. So, we find that the king was very mad. He was angry. And he said, I'm going to tell you, if you don't tell me the dream and don't tell me the meaning of it, I'm going to cut you in little pieces and I'm going to burn your houses and you'll be put in dung here. Or it's going to be refuge. And so, The one that was over the king's messenger went out to start gathering up all these wise men ready to kill him. And as he came to Daniel, he was telling him what was going on. And this first thing he heard what it was. You're going to be killed because you can't tell the king his what his dream, and you can't tell the meaning. Daniel said, wait a minute. Let me think about this a minute. You know, kind of, I know the way we would say it. See what's going on here. So he immediately does something that we need to do when something comes up. You know, he prays to God, and he has Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego with him to pray to God about. Well, God told him in a dream what this was, what this dream was all about. And so the unreasonable thing that the king has set up, Daniel's going to be able to get around it. The king's decision, Daniel's involvement, in all of this, and Daniel's going to tell him what all of it means. He his request now is to go in and see Nebuchadnezzar. And he wants to tell the king that what his dream was. And he tells him. But he says, O king, these other men were right. There is nobody on earth that can do that. Only God of heaven can do that. He can tell these dreams. And he said, through him, I can tell you, basically. And so, he begins the introduction to the, what the dreams are and how that it's gonna affect, him in the days to come. Here is what the dream was. You had a statue that was huge. It had a head of gold. The head was gold. The silver was the upper torso. Greece, or the thigh area was bronze, and the legs and feet of iron and iron and clay. And he tells him about these things that during this particular time that he has shown, God has actually shown him what's going to happen in the latter days. And so, I'm sure Nebuchadnezzar is saying, latter days? What's that all about? Well, he tells him that there's a stone that's cut without human hands. It'll become a great mountain. And, it's gonna, not only gonna come down and destroy this image, and destroy all of those kingdoms, but it's gonna become a great kingdom throughout the world. You can just imagine what Nebuchadnezzar is thinking. Lose his kingdom? Yeah, you're gonna lose your kingdom. And so, we find that, Daniel and his friends, was praised and promoted because of this. And let's look at a few things. I know I had to rush through this. I'm sorry, a lot of material. And I wish I could have had three more days. But as we look at some applications, remember, Daniel, he realized and he resolved in his mind that he was not going to defy the word of God. He wanted to follow what God said. And if we would keep that in our minds as we go about our daily lives and resolve to do what God says, nothing good will occur until we first make up our minds that no matter what happens, we should do God's will. Actions always follow thoughts. That means when we think about something, we've got to actually put it into action, as we provide our thoughts. Daniel found a way to please God and those who were in authority, which is, you know, if we look at things sometimes, we can do that. Now, does that mean we have to go along with things that is against God's will? Absolutely not. But we can serve God, hopefully. The heart and mind, it's non-negotiable when you look at these kind of things. The Messianic Kingdom, we find in Daniel, the second chapter, talking about the last days. As we look at the great story, the combining of the two chapters, two in quotations there, and it deals with the coming of the New Testament Kingdom that we find in, these passages in Isaiah and Joel, and if we have time, we'll look at some of them right quick. All right. Isaiah 2:2 says that it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountain and shall be exalted above the hill. Joel 2 in verse 28 and 9 talks about, it will come to pass afterwards, and I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh. And your old men will dream dreams, and young men will see visions. Daniel 2 talks about just what we talked about. The last day, and in the days of these kings, the ones that were the Romans and the feet of iron and iron and clay, during this time frame is when the kingdom will be set up by God, and it will last forever. And in Acts 2, it talks about the day of Pentecost, where the Holy Spirit came upon them, upon the apostles at that time. When it was fully come, they were all with one accord in one place. And the house was filled with the mighty, rushing mighty wind, and the cloven tongues appeared like a fire set upon each of the apostles. Those kind of things are taking place in all of the two chapters. Acts 2:17, it says, "And it shall come to pass in the last days, saith God, I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your young men shall dream, shall see visions, and your old men dream dreams. And on my servants and on my handmaids will I pour out in those days of my spirit, and they shall prophesy." And we just saw that back in the day. All right, I think our time is up. Thank y'all so much. I'm sorry I talked so much.